Welcome back to episode 45 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy. Coyle, have you ever bet over under?
Yeah.
We're just going to call that mutate now.
Oh, nice. And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And you know there's an Icoria mechanic inspired by the TV show The Facts of Life?
No.
Mutate the good, mutate the bad, mutate them both, and there you have a pretty decent board state.
Please listen carefully.
The Facts of Life.
The Facts and this of Life.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander. If you're looking for a way to support the podcast, there's a really, really, really simple way you can do it. If you can just go down in the comments, leave a comment, like, follow, subscribe, whichever way you are listening to the podcast, we'd really appreciate if you left your feedback on it. Another way you could help support the podcast, we do have a TCG player affiliate link located on our website at guardianprojectpodcast.com. If you could go through that link whenever you're trying to pick up your singles or sealed product, maybe you're building a new Icoria commander deck, if you could make those purchases through our link, it supports the podcast and we'd really appreciate it.
We also have a Patreon. You can head over to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and support for as little as $1 a month. All of your support is greatly appreciated. We want to thank all of our patrons every week. We couldn't do this without you, and all of the proceeds are going back into the show to come up with new and unique giveaways and interesting topics for us to go over in the future. Coyle, what do we have on the agenda this week?
This week we are going to quickly talk about how Companion is impacting the standard meta.
It's real good.
As we see it in Arena. we are going to talk about the new banning in Commander, the banning of the card Flash, and how it's going to impact a certain sect of Commander players out there. We are going to play a game called Wrong Answers Only.
Wrong Answers Only.
And we'll finish out with the Commander of the Week. It'll be my Kess Dissident Mage deck.
In honor of the specific sector of Commander we're going to talk about this week.
Absolutely.
So Companion seems to be a real good mechanic.
It's like standard Commander. You always got it available.
Wait, isn't that called Brawl?
Yeah, but this is better than Brawl. You can play this on more than just Wednesday.
I have been playing the black-red sacrifice, or the mono-black version as well, with Lures the Dream Den, where you can play a permanent. Well, I guess your starting deck has all CMC 2 or less, and then you can play a permanent with CMC 2 or less from your graveyard each turn, and it's a 3/2 with lifelink. It's really good.
Yeah, I see that deck every once in a while.
I like playing I think it's called Myers Grasp. Target creature gets -3/-3 till end of turn. Mm-hmm. That's really great. So you play it from your hand, and then you immediately play it from the graveyard, and you knock out two of their creatures, put them on the back foot. But it works really well, even with the card Call of the Death Dweller. It's a sorcery that says return up to 2 target creatures from your graveyard with CMC 3 or less.
Combined CMC, yeah.
Correct, combined CMC. So you can just return Lures alone if you really need it. And then cast a card from the graveyard off of Lures. I've really enjoyed playing that deck recently, and I've been seeing a few decks playing the companion that gives like all of those weird creature types +1/+1 in vigilance.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, one's been pretty.
The Orphan Guard.
Kahira, the Orphan Guard. I run into that deck a few times as well. It just feels like a weird mishmash of things that are happening, but it works.
Yeah, see, I've been playing the Simic Ramp Garuda deck. I don't have of all the rares and mythics to unlock everything, so it's a little janky version of it. But let me tell you, that mirror matchup is so much fun. The game will end with someone milling out. No one actually swings to win in that game. It is just constant Garuda.
That's Thassa's Oracle, right? That's a Thassa's Oracle win.
No, it's a my opponent draws without any cards left in their library win.
Oh, really? Oh, I have seen somebody throw in like two Thassa's Oracles and they return that. They were very close at one point. They had 10 cards in their deck, and I think they only had 6 Devotion to Blue, so they didn't hit it, but they almost did.
Nice, very nice. I'll have to think about putting the Oracle in there.
And I've run into a few of the Obosh, the Prey Piercer decks, the black-red companion that has your deck contains only cards with odd CMCs and then lands. And it says if a source you control with an odd CMC would deal damage to a permanent or player, deals double that damage. That's a really strong deck if you can't remove that companion. And it's a 3/5, so it's really not that easy to remove it.
Right. Yeah, I see people are playing that in Black Red Sacrifice, right? With like the Cauldron Familiar and Oven combo.
Yep. Cat combo is also being played with Lures. I think you can really just pick the version you want.
It's interesting to see what works better when it comes to like Mayhem Devil versus the Black White Vampire that cares about your creatures dying.
Yeah, Cruel Celebrant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's interesting to see, but it's been... I haven't had this much fun playing Standard in a long time, if I'm being honest. It's a really good place for it right now. I don't know if there's anything particularly broken. We do know that Karuga is seeing probably the most play at the top end in some of these like Jeskai Fires, Jeskai Control decks. And that's definitely not a companion I thought people were going to be using.
Yeah, and I know there's some issues with MTGO with Garuda Doom of Depths. There's some issues with the Leyline of the Black Leyline.
Leyline of the Void.
Leyline of the Void. So for now, the card is banned until they get the coding updated. But I know a lot of people are interested in playing that in other formats that are also doing consistently well with the same clone type effects of returning your spark double, but you've also got actual just clone and the Simic one from Dragon's Maze that every upkeep it if it's not a token you make a token of it. Progenitor Mimic.
Okay.
So yeah. I've seen a few versions playing that as well. So I think the companion mechanic has been a hit. And I think from what I've seen, a lot of people are very excited about it, but they said, I'm not sure I'm going to still be excited in 2 months.
Well, that might be true. It depends how much that Winota deck keeps kicking my butt, though. So we'll see.
You know, Agent of Treachery will rotate soon, right?
Please rotate.
What's Agent of Treachery?
Yeah, that was M19.
Yeah, Agent of Treachery will leave us, I believe, in the fall, so you won't have to worry about Winota swinging and dropping 4 Agent of Treacheries in one turn.
Please.
But we're going to play that in Brawl tonight, but I can't play Agent of Treachery because it's Brawl, so I can't throw anything with blue in there.
That's okay. You can probably still beat some face pretty hard with Winota. It's a very, very good card.
Yeah, she's really strong, and I definitely plan on... It's probably one of my favorite Brawl decks that I've played so far.
Nice.
Yeah. So we had a banning in Commander this week, and it was a banning not because it's breaking the entire format, but because it's breaking a specific subsector of the format. You want to go ahead and tell us why Flash was banned?
Yeah, so the card is Flash. It's for 1 and a blue. You can take a creature from your hand and put it on the battlefield, and then... and then pay its converted mana cost. If you don't, you sacrifice the creature. So people would think and look at Flash, you know, from a casual perspective, it says, okay, you get a free sacrifice outlet or something, or you can flash a creature out for an extra 2 mana at any point in time. Well, in the competitive EDH community is where this card was being seen most played. There's very, very few other decks that were seeing this card. I believe Mimeoplasm was probably one of the only casual decks that was playing Flash. So in the competitive EDH community, people would be casting Flash in order to get Protean Hulk out onto the battlefield, and then it sacrifices with Flash. With the Protean Hulk says, when this creature dies, you can find 6 converted mana cost worth of creatures, put them on the battlefield, and the goal is to put a pile of creatures onto the battlefield that essentially win you the game, either by milling yourself out and then have a Laboratory Maniac effect, or just by putting enough Hate Bears out to control the board enough so that when it is your turn, you can combo out and win. So this was affecting the CEDH community a lot, because if you weren't playing Flash Hulk, then you weren't playing the top tier deck. It was bar none the best deck you could play. There's a few different versions of it, and there's arguable on which version is best. I'm not really sure there is a version that's best, but this particular combo was the best combo that could happen. So reading specifically, speaking of exceptional decisions, we are banning Flash, the card, not the mechanic. Enough CDH players who we trust have convinced us that it is the only change they need for the environment they seek to cultivate. Which is ironic because they don't run that card in CDH. Though they represent a small fraction of the commander player base, we are willing to make this effort for them. It should not be taken as a signal that we are considering any kind of change in how we intend to manage the format. This is an extraordinary step, and one we are unlikely to repeat. We use the ban list to guide players in how to approach the format, and hope Flash's role on the list will be to signal cheating things into play quickly in non-interactive ways isn't interesting. Don't do that. So what they mean by that, in a non-interactive way, and what a lot of people don't understand, is when you flash the Protean Hulk onto the battlefield, some people are like, well, why don't you just Swords to Plowshare it or Path to Exile it while it's on the battlefield? Well, the card Flash is not yet resolved, and so priority has not passed to you. So Protean Hulk will die, and that trigger will go on the stack before priority is passed to you. So that's what they mean by a non-interactive way.
Right.
So that's why Flash was banned. And I'm actually... So as you may know, if you're a listener, I do enjoy playing CDH. I've never built a Flash Hulk deck before. I have the cards to build maybe like a 3-color Flash Hulk deck. You typically want to do 4 or 5 color to get all of your protection and interaction that you want. But I actually play what was considered a tier 2 CEDH deck, which was Consultation Kess. I'm super excited because this format's opening wide open now, and it's going to be super, super exciting.
Yeah, so I've been watching a lot of videos from like Playing with Power and the Spike Feeders, and there are a lot of non-Flash Hulk decks, obviously, that they've shown on those on their episodes. So I expect that there will be a lot more diversity in the format for now. And surprisingly enough, we had a few people that were playing very, very competitive decks. I know we had Anthony on the podcast, Judge Anthony, a couple of months ago at our league. There were some people that decided they were just going to go full CEDH for a few games. And a lot of them were already playing Consultation Kess, or they were winning with Thassa's Oracle in difficult to respond ways. So I expect to see that a little more. Obviously, those folks are not, you know, losing anything. But there are a lot of resources that you can look at and watch and read that tell you exactly what you need to do to just beat that specific win con.
For sure.
Which is really useful. You know, if someone has that Thassa's Oracle on the battlefield, you can just force them to draw a card before it resolves. And you're like, oh, you lose. You know? But it was interesting to see that, you know, they continue to say in their update that they believe Commander is still best as a social focused format, and they're not going to be making any changes to accommodate tournament play, which is fine. And I think, like we learned when we were talking with Anthony a few months ago, tournament play just raises the stakes, right? If you're playing for money or you're playing in a league, you're inherently going to play more powerful decks.
For sure.
And they said taking responsibility for your and your opponent's fun, including setting expectations with your group, is a fundamental part of Commander. And organizers who want to move towards a more untrusted game should consider adding additional rules or guidance to create the Commander experience they want to offer. So, I mean, there's rules as part of our league that aren't on the deck building constraint, but it's on the point system. So right. I think that we've done this. So they say you can't blow up everybody's lands. You're going to not get any points, right? You're not going to get any. And so I think this right here, their explanation is perfect. And if you want to allow this, go for it. But I think everybody has taken to this change very well. I haven't seen any complaints about Flash.
No.
Going, even on the non-CEDH side.
Right. I mean, we looked at the play percentages of Flash, and it's so low being played outside of the CEDH community. So they knew that it wasn't going to have a huge impact. And, you know, even in a casual deck, losing Flash probably isn't going to do much to you.
I think the only deck, truthfully, that actually cares about Flash is Rayami, First of the Fallen. The Sultai commander that says if a non-token creature you control would die, exile it with a blood counter on it. And then Rayami always has the abilities of those cards that have the blood counter. So this deck actually played it in an extremely fair, well, I guess I shouldn't say in an extremely fair way, but they're playing it in a way so that they can just throw a creature into their exile and then their commander has some ability.
Yeah, just to
ability.
Get keywords. Correct. Like I mentioned before, even Mimeoplasms, we're seeing this deck played a little bit just to have a creature. It's like how to entomb your creature from your hand.
Correct.
It's a really, I don't even want to say fair, inefficient. I'm going to say it's an inefficient way to do it. But you know, it's another means in order to do it. And obviously you can consider that card to have modal ability and actually flash a creature out. If you don't need the ability to throw your creature in your graveyard.
Right. So what does the flash banning mean for CEDH?
So, like I said, top tier of the deck, or top tier decks in the format for the longest time now have been these Flash Hulk decks, Protean Hulk decks. Typically four color, sometimes five color, but typically four color, so you can run Thrasios and Timna as your commanders. There's some versions that don't run those specific partners as your commanders, but if you weren't playing a Flash Hulk deck, you weren't playing absolute top tier. And that doesn't mean you can't win with a lower tier competitive EDH deck, but it does mean you won't win as consistently as these Flash Hulk decks. The decks even played the right combination of cards in order to be able to cast Flash on turn zero with a gemstone mine and then a creature that exiles for a mana. So you can actually win before anyone gets an opportunity to play a land. So taking this particular combo out of the meta is going to open it up to all of those tier two decks to finally move up into tier one. And let me tell you, there are a ton of tier two CEDH decks. So the meta is going to be vast now. I'm really, really excited to play in it. Because you're not just preparing to play against Flash anymore. It's just, if someone has to cast Flash, I have to counter it. Now you have to worry about Godo Bandit Warlord. You have to worry about Cass. You have to worry about Gitrog. I mean, there's so many different things that have to happen. So now you need to prepare for a lot more.
Right.
So I guess that can lead us into our next point, which is, what win cons do we think are going to be prevalent in the format now that Flash Hulk is gone? Obviously, Flash Hulk was typically using a Laboratory Maniac type effect in order to win, but it was winning with a combination of creatures that allowed you to mill your deck out.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Thassa's Oracle is a really big creature right now, as we mentioned. Thassa's Oracle being a main win con, Thassa's Oracle also being, for all intents and purposes of our conversation here, a Laboratory Maniac win condition.
Right.
Where when it enters the battlefield, equal to your devotion to blue, if you have equal to or less than that cards left in your library, you win the game. So typically you're going to be casting Thassa's Oracle. With the enter the battlefield trigger on the stack, you cast Demonic Consultation, which is an instant speed for one black that says name a card. Remove the top six cards of your library from the game, then exile cards until you reveal the named card. then you can put that card into your hand. Typically, what's going to happen is you're going to name a card you don't have in your deck, and then exile your entire deck, and the trigger resolves, and you win. I think this probably will still be the most prevalent win condition, depending on how many people turn to Gitrog. I think the Gitrog monster is going to see a lot of popularity increase now. And, you know, besides other decks. But the Gitrog monster wins in a very different kind of way by pinging people for infinite, using various different ways. Scourge Familiar is the big combo piece in Gitrog. Scourge Familiar is 4 and a black for a 3/3 flyer. That says discard a card, add black to your mana pool. With Gitrog on the battlefield, what this allows you to do is discard a card called Dakmor Salvage, which is Dredge 2 and it's a land. So when you discard it, Gitrog triggers. Gitrog says when a land enters your graveyard from anywhere, you may draw a card. And instead of drawing, you dredge the two, land goes in. Produce infinite black mana, do degenerate things with your infinite black mana. So I think those two combos in particular are probably going to see the most play.
So that does just go infinite. You can shortcut that one. Shortcut that, though. So you actually have to go through it.
You can't shortcut it because you do run out of library. There are there are shuffle effects.
Sure.
But yes, that is one downside to the Gitrog is you can get dinged for slow play if you are in a tournament setting.
Yeah.
So be careful in that. It is fun. It's very consistent. You are going to play solitaire for about 10 minutes unless people scoop to you. So that is also, you know, if they know what you're doing and they're good sports about it and they don't have any interaction, then they'll allow you to do it.
But don't play that on MTGO because you're going to clock yourself.
Or you will clock out. Don't do that. Yeah.
And people don't have to scoop on MTGO.
They do not.
You got to play it out.
They'll just, they pass priority automatically. What is that now? It was
F6.
F6. F6, and they go grab a snack and they slowly get their win from you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So there are other win cons that we're going to see again. Back in the day, if you will, a few years ago.
Food Chain?
Food Chain was always big. Food Chain and Doomsday were like the two combo pieces people were talking about. So Food Chain is an enchantment for 3 and a green, I think.
Well, let's look up Food Chain. It is.
I look up Food Chain on Google, and it doesn't, go immediately.
Well, I'm on Scryfall. Yeah, two and a green. Remove a creature you control from the game. Add X mana of any color to your mana pool, where X is the removed creature's converted mana cost +1, and this may only be spent to play creature spells.
So there's lots of ways to produce infinite mana this way with Food Chain. Squee the Immortal was printed in Dominaria. He allows you to go infinite because you can cast him from exile. So he's 3 CMC. You sacrifice him, you get 4 CM, you get 4 mana, cast him for 3, produce infinite mana that way.
Eternal Scourge, I believe, is the other. It's one of the Eldrazi's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly.
And that one is a creature that has 3 CMC as well, and you can cast her from exile.
Exactly. And the two CEDH Food Chain, so just Food Chain used to be the really good win condition in Prosh, Sky Raider, because you get a number of tokens, they're kobolds, I believe, equal to the CMC that it costs to cast Prosh. So sacrificing Prosh, you get 1 extra, and then you sacrifice the 5 kobolds that came with them, and you're now producing an extra 6 mana. It only takes 2 more to cast them from the command zone because of the commander tax. So you produce infinite mana with Prosh that way. The new hotness is actually Korvold, Fey Cursed King, because you get to you draw out your deck, you play Squee the Immortal in there as well. and the other food chain deck being the first sliver, an all slivers deck, allowing you to hopefully infinitely cast the first sliver until, again, you hit Squeedy Immortal. Squeedy Immortal is really the combo piece, and the Eldrazi that you can cast from your exile as well.
I believe General Tazri also goes infinite with food chain. The five color commander for allies. I know Tazri food chain was played for a while there.
For sure. So we could see that deck come to fruition again. That one I actually haven't seen gameplay of before.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting. I think people may have changed over. Oh, it's not the same deck. I was going to say too.
It uses food chain, and then again Eternal Scourge or Mist Hollow Griffin, or because they can both be cast from exile, or mm-hmm. or even Squee. But then your outlets are your allies. So you have Kalastria Healer, which is whenever an ally enters, each opponent loses life and you gain a life. So you just sack and replay them, and then Hagra Diabolist. Is that what it is? Yeah, Diabolist. Whenever another ally enters the battlefield, you may have target player lose life equal to the number of allies you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the Halimar Excavator. So it's whenever it or another ally enters the battlefield, target player mills their library. So you just go infinite by casting those two creatures and then either milling. But it does require another card. So it's not just Prosh, you know?
Sure. Well, and Prosh, you know, you would have to give him a way to have haste in order to swing with the turn that you do it.
Right.
The advantage you have with General Tazri is that you can tutor up your win conditions with Tazri. With Korvold, right. You have to draw into them. With the first sliver, you have to cascade into them. So, you know, definitely different ways to look at it for the food chain win con. But definitely are going to see more food chain now.
Mm-hmm.
Quick aside, I do think that with the banning of Flash and opening up of the format, more people are going to get into CEDH. I think CEDH is going to grow in the community after this ban.
You think so?
I do.
I think you just need to have, you need to make sure that you have play groups that are willing and able, right, to be able to play that. But I know that just before our stay at home order went into effect, there was going to be a high power Saturday starting at one of our LGSs. And then obviously we all went into quarantine, but I know that they were looking to start cultivating a small community for this on a day that is not the day when all, the casual players show up to either League or FNM.
Right. And I do have a high powered planeswalker deck, and that was my compromise. Like, if I can't play my consultation cast deck, I'm gonna take the Grixis shell that is that deck, make a planeswalker deck out of it. Which inherently, planeswalker decks, don't get me wrong, they're really good in a 1v1 format. In a 4-player format, they tend to not be so good. So having that strong shell with that deck is it makes the deck very playable and very enjoyable and competitive.
Speaking of a competitive planeswalker deck, I've been tracking all of my wins for my decks this year and losses and a bunch of stats on my Year of EDH thread. And I finally worked to get my husband put a macro together for me to pull in the number of times I played the commander and then how many times I've won with it versus what decks I've played against. And my Jota deck, I have a Jota planeswalker deck, Archmage Eternal, mm-hmm. the five color or three color that lets me pay. No, it is five color, I guess. It's five color identity. Yeah. Where you can pay Wooburg and then cast a spell for free. That deck has won 5 out of 5 times this year.
Yep.
So
every time I play against that deck, Andy either has Conflux or Omniscience in hand. Every time.
Or both.
Okay. If both, why not?
Yeah, stupid stuff. Anyway, okay. What other win cons do we have?
So Dramatic Scepter is our win condition to produce infinite mana. So Dramatic Reversal is a 2-mana instant that says untap all non-land permanents you control.
Mm-hmm.
So you put it under an Isochron Scepter. Isochron Scepters is a 2-mana artifact that has imprint. which means you exile a card from your hand. You exile an instant or a sorcery that's 2 CMC or less and put it under Isochron Scepter. And then Isochron Scepter, you pay 2 and tap it. You create a copy of that spell, and then you cast that. You may cast that spell. So casting Dramatic Reversal actually untaps Isochron Scepter itself. So all you have to do is be able to produce 3 mana in Mana Rocks or Dorks, Mana Dorks, which allows you to produce an infinite amount of mana. And then you can either do a copy artifact to make another Isochron Scepter and put a swan song underneath it to produce infinite birds, which is a way that some people do it. Or, you know, there's tons of different things you can do with infinite mana. We do now see this new blue-green legendary creature printed in Ikoria that makes it so that your activated abilities cost... Was it 2 less? No, they produce 1 extra mana.
Yeah, is his name Kinnan? It's the Bonder Prodigy.
Yeah, Kinnan.
Is it Kinnan?
K-I-N-N-A-N. Whenever you tap a non-land permanent for mana, add 1 mana of any type that permanent produced. Even with just a Basalt Monolith, you're going to produce infinite colorless mana with the Commander Kinnan. Difficult to say if this is actually going to break into CEDH or not. It's very easy to produce infinite mana with this commander, but you are limited to only playing blue and green. You don't get the protection and the removal from white. You don't get the tutors from black. So you still get blue and green, which are the 2 strongest colors and the colors that you really need. So it'll be interested to see if this commander does break in to CEDH just with its infinite mana combos. I mean, there's probably 6 different ways you can produce infinite mana just with your commander and 1 other card. So probably we'll see that come into play as well.
Do we think we're still going to see Najeela the Blade Blossom with infinite, I assume?
Yeah. Yeah. Najeela Derevi combo will definitely be seen. I mean, some people... are still playing it today. It's right. Very close to top tier. I would say it's on the same level as a Gitrog deck. Derevi says whenever a creature you control deals damage, you can tap or untap a permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So with Derevi, Najeela, and I think it's 3 other creatures. Yeah, because you have to untap 5 mana worth of permanence. Najeela the Blade Blossom says you could pay Wooburg if you do untap your creatures and there's an additional combat. So you can basically swing an infinite number of times as soon as you have Derevi out onto the battlefield.
I can't swing with Derevi. So close.
Well, you could swing with Derevi if you had a Sarkhan out there to turn it into a dragon. It's the only way you can swing with Derevi.
100%. That's a great win con. Not CEDH level, but flavor-wise, it's CEDH level flavor-wise.
Derevi stacks probably will be kind of up there. Not as much as Derevi stacks, but Derevi stacks is a pretty strong deck. Stacks being an acronym representing a few different cards that actually prevent your opponents from doing things, either forcing them to sacrifice permanents, making it so that their lands don't untap, a lot of what would be considered not nice things in a casual format. There are decks that take advantage of that. Again, Derevi, another one, because you can untap your permanents by dealing combat damage with your creatures, allowing you to get around some of these stacks pieces. So we probably will see a lot more kind of control-y types of games going on in competitive with these stacks decks, with control decks. And on top of that, you're going to see some real quick combos. Ones you're going to have to look out for, people still play them today or played them in the Flash meta. And it's like, do I hold my counterspell up for Flash or do I hold my counterspell up for Godo, Bandit Warlord? So Godo, Bandit Warlord, he is a 5 mana mono red. You wouldn't ever think that mono red is going to be in the competitive scene. I'm sorry, he's 5 and a red. However, Godo is very, very easy to go infinite with. So Godo Bandit Warlord is at 3/3. It says when he enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an equipment card and put it into play if you do shuffle your library. It also has this other thing about Samurai. No one cares about it. So they printed a card in the latest Dominaria set called Helm of the Host. It is a 4-mana equipment that equips for 5 that says at the beginning of combat, you may make a copy of the equipped creature. If it's legendary, it will not, the copy will not have legendary, and it gains haste. So the second part of Godo that does care about Samurai, whenever he attacks for the first time each turn, untap it, and all Samurai you control after this phase, you get an additional combat phase. So this allows you to pseudo make infinite Godos and have infinite combats, because at the beginning of combat, every single time, you get another copy of your Godo Bandit Warlord. This also tends to play some stacks pieces. You want to ramp out real fast. You'll play a Panharmonicon just so you can go grab a Hammer of Nazan and the Helm of the Host so that it equips immediately and for free to Godo. Very straightforward deck, mono red, very glass cannon, in that if you don't win, you lose. So, which you could say for any deck, but it means a lot for this Godo. And then another combo that's going to start seeing more play is a combo that you actually play, Andy, is your Animate Dead World Gorger Dragon combo. So.
Oh, yeah, that's my Lysolde the Blood Witch deck that has no win con other than that.
So you explain this combo.
Sure. It's a combo that is terrible if someone removes it for you, because you are done. So all you have to do is get World Gorger Dragon into the graveyard, and then you have an Animate Dead effect in hand. So really it's an enchantment, so it has to be a permanent that returns your creature from the graveyard to the battlefield, enchanting it. So World Gorger Dragon says when it enters the battlefield, you exile all other permanents you control until World Gorger Dragon leaves the battlefield. That includes your lands, but it also includes the enchantment. So World Gorger Dragon comes in, you exile everything. When that enchantment leaves the battlefield, it also has an effect that says when this enchantment leaves, you have to sacrifice the creature. So cards like Animate Dead or Necromancy or Dance of the Dead are the three that I'm using. When World Gorger Dragon comes in, you have to exile that enchantment, which means that World Gorger Dragon gets sacrificed. And then the enchantment comes back in and you target your World Gorger Dragon. But in response, you tap all of your mana before it gets exiled when World Gorger Dragon comes back in the battlefield, thus making infinite mana. The problem is you have to, one, make sure that World Gorger Dragon's ability resolves while your enchantment is on the battlefield. If it does not, if someone bounces your enchantment before World Gorger Dragon's ability resolves, World Gorger Dragon will exile all of your other permanents, and then World Gorger Dragon will... Yeah, everything's just exiled because he won't come back onto the battlefield because you have to sacrifice it when that enchantment leaves. The other issue is you do have to have another creature to target in any graveyard with one of those for you to be able to stop that combo. Otherwise, it just goes infinite. You don't have a way to stop it unless there's another creature in the graveyard.
Right.
So those are the two issues. But if your commander, like Lysolde the Blood Witch, has an activated ability where you can make infinite mana and then deal damage to players, you can play your commander, sacrifice your commander or deal damage, whatever your commander does, with that infinite mana. Obviously, that's just one option, and I wanted to play a deck that isn't seen very often with an extremely degenerate combo that I find through like 15 different tutors.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've seen some people playing Kroxa as the black-red, you know, competitive commander with the World Gorger Dragon combo, but Lysolde works literally the exact same way. Because when it comes to infinite mana, it doesn't matter how much mana they cost.
Right, because you've got your commander tax mana.
I know a lot of people were messing around with Anya Falconwrath when she came out with the World Gorger combo, just because you can discard World Gorger if it's in your hand with Anya herself. So I think these types of like kind of niche combo decks are going to see a lot of play as well.
Just keep in mind, you do feel bad when you resolve that, though.
Not if you're playing in the right setting. If you're playing in the right setting, you go, oh, good win. Game two? All right, perfect. Yes. Let's play again.
And at least with my Lysolda deck, I have to draw a card each time I sacrifice her because she's black. And so mm-hmm. I will potentially also deck myself if someone has gained too much life.
That's true. But yeah. I mean, you draw into like a Torment of Hailfire or something and then dump all your mana into that.
Correct. Yeah, I do have that in there. No, good stuff. Good stuff. That is probably one of my most, I guess, my closest competitive deck, being it's just a bunch of tutors in red black.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So one other thing, actually I have two other decks to talk about real quick. One of them is Naru Meha Ghostly Flicker. It's another very glass cannon combo. Naru Meha's is two blue. It says when it enters the battle, it has flash. When it enters the battlefield, you may copy target instant that is on the stack. What this allows you to do is cast a Ghostly Flicker, which allows you to blink Naru Meha. Ghostly Flicker also blinks one other permanent, so you could blink like a Sunscorched Desert, which is a land. When it enters the battlefield, it deals one damage to target opponent. So infinite blinks of the Sunscorched Desert. I do prefer this deck over Godo because you get to play blue, you get to play a lot of the good counter spells to help you protect your combo. But again, it is glass cannon. There isn't a ton of ways for you to win in that deck, so you have to find your pieces. The last deck I wanted to talk about is Azuri Elf Ball.
Okay.
Because so creature-based combos, other than Najila, aren't very prevalent in CEDH right now. And that's because it's faster to just combo off and make infinite mana. But Azuri can have a very large board state by like turn four. And you can swing. I think swinging to win is going to be something that people are going to have to mold their decks to care about now, because these swinging decks are going to do well again. Azuri, you put elves out, you pump all your elves, it has overrun on a stick, and you win that way. So if you are staying out of CEDH because you don't like doing the combos and you'd rather just swing and win, Azuri is actually a really good insert into the format. You don't need a Gaia's Cradle to play that deck, but it sure does help. I don't own one personally.
I don't either. They're really expensive.
They are very expensive.
But when you're playing in CDH, a lot of people play with proxies. So as long as your playgroup or your shop is okay with a proxy, feel free.
Absolutely. It's all,
and especially if you're playing Paper Commander online like we have been, especially through the CEDH or Play EDH Discord, they do encourage proxies. Like if you're playing like high power, like they're okay.
Yeah, I mean no one's gonna care. They just want to play games.
Right. Well, you wanna play a game? You wanna play a game?
You wanna play a game? Yeah, so I do.
We've been mulling over this for a really long time. We wanted to play wrong answers only. So we're going to present either a question or a situation to each other for the other one to answer, and then they have to respond with a wrong answer only.
And obviously, this is paying homage to the first person that met Mr. Jura after he first planeswalked, when he said, "My name's Kithian." Gideon, you say. Wrong answers only.
Wrong answers only. Okay. I will go first.
Okay.
Coil.
Mm-hmm.
How did Liliana spark ignite? Wrong answers only.
Okay, so Liliana spark ignited when she found the cure to Korvold 19 virus. That's what happened.
Oh my gosh, that was really relevant to today.
Yeah, but yeah,
interesting.
All right, Andy, tooth and nail entwined, wrong answers only.
you realize that you just found the elusive carpenter dentist combo, tooth and nail.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
Okay, Coyle. Expropriate has been cast. What happens next? Wrong answers only.
So I yell time at the top of my lungs, and then I immediately stand up and start sifting through my LGS's bulk bin.
Yeah, isn't that how that works? Yeah.
You should always say time, because then you get to go get a snack.
Okay.
All right. Andy, your opponent is on their fourth extra turn, and they have three more to go. Wrong answers only.
I pull out my Uno deck and I play a reverse and I take the next three turns instead.
That's a good one.
All right, Coyle. Your opponent overloads Cyclonic Rift. In response, what do you do? Wrong answers only.
Cry a little, but then flash every single permanent in my hand out onto the battlefield.
They're just coming back to your hand anyway, right? You might as well.
Might as well do it.
You might as well.
All right, Andy. You just cast Bribery on the Marin player. Wrong answers only.
Obviously, I grab their Razaketh. I sack all my creatures to kill myself so we can end this game.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right, Coyle, how do you fix your warped cards? Wrong answers only.
Okay. So, okay, instead of fixing my warped cards, I'm going to warp all of my other cards that are not warped.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say.
If all your cards are warped, none of your cards are warped. That's what
none
I was looking
at. None of the cards are marked if you bend all the cards.
You're not wrong. Okay, Andy. You just got a new hotness card from Ikoria, and you want to slip it in your commander deck, but you need to cut a card. Wrong answers only.
You just add the card and you say you're bad at math.
Oops, 101.
All right, Coyle. You are preparing to head to a Magic tournament, and you go to the store to buy all your supplies that you need to bring for the weekend. What do you buy? Wrong answers only.
So I can't say a giant bin of cashews, pretzels, and meat and cheese.
No, because that's the right answer. That's the right answer.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get complete taco bar ingredients. I'm going to get garlic and onion chips. I'm going to get a ton of Starbucks. And how about some of that Polish food that you always talk about getting every once in a while?
Oh, yeah. See, you're going to want to be close to home after you eat all that stuff, because you're not going to make it in a tournament setting.
Yep, exactly. All right. I got one more for you.
One more?
All right. This is near and dear to my heart, mind you. Why was Hazoret the only god Bolas left alive on Amonkhet? Wrong answers only.
Because Bolas knows the answer to the question, what does the fox say? And he's not about that nonsense.
That's totally fair. Oh, man.
Oh, this was so fun. We should do this one more often.
Yes. We talked about doing that for a long time.
It's been like months. Mm-hmm. It's been sitting in my notes for potential podcast topics. And I was like, all right, we need something to add this week. Let's do wrong answers only. So this was great. And I do have to give Nick the credit for the for coming up with the answer for the last one with the what does the fox say. Nice. I was like, I don't know what I would say here. And he was like, well, what does the fox say? I was like, oh my gosh, that was so good. You want to do Commander of the Week? I think you've got a competitive deck this week that you kind of already talked about a little bit.
Yes. So since it's on topic, we're gonna talk about a competitive deck that I own, which is my Kess Dissident Mage deck. This one actually doesn't have a pun name. It's my only deck that doesn't have like a funny name or a pun name, because it is Consultation Kess. Sorry, all those people out there that thought I was going to come up with a fun name for this one. I could call it Kess, I win, but it doesn't always win. So there's that. So this is a CEDH deck. It did compete well against Flash. It is a Grixis control deck. that aims to win by comboing off with a Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation or Jace Wielder of Mysteries or Laboratory Maniac, along with, again, Demonic Consultation, or the other card you can play is Tainted Pact. And Tainted Pact is one and a black. It's an instant. It says remove the top card of your library from the game. You may put that card into your hand. Unless it has the same name as another card removed this way. Repeat this process, and you put a card, or until you put a card in your hand, or you remove two cards with the same name. So Tainted Pact is a way around if someone like digs through your deck. I forget exactly what the card is called that allows you to search a target player's deck and exile a card, and then you may cast it from exile, and you have the card for the rest of the game. So if someone goes through and takes my Demonic Consultation, I have this backup. It's Tainted Pact. I do have a little bit of a convoluted way that I can mill myself out with another combo that I'll talk about in a second. But those are the two main win cons with the three Laboratory Maniac effects. So in here, we're only playing 30 lands. You might think that's really aggressive, but we're also playing 18 artifacts where one of those artifacts is not a mana artifact. And that's Sensei's Divining Top, which can help us find our mana if we need it. So the deck lives at about 5 mana. So Cast Dissident Mage is 4 mana. It's 1 blue, black, red. It's a 3/4 human wizard with flying. That says during each of your turns, you may cast an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead. So basically you get one free flashback that's equal to the cost of the card per turn, only applicable on your turn. So you can't, like, on someone else's turn, use Kess's ability to flashback a counterspell. You can do that on your own turn when you're trying to combo off, but just not on other people's turns. So we play 25 instants, a lot of them being cantrips. Cantrips meaning one mana spells that allow you to draw a card. This deck was originally built around only having Laboratory Maniac as the win con. And then we got Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, and then we got Thassa's Oracle. So the deck has gradually gotten better, which helps. We run a lot of tutors. We run Demonic Tutor. We run Vampiric Tutor. We do run Imperial Seal, which I understand has become a very, very expensive card lately. I think I got mine for $90 and it's up to $400 now, which is crazy. Don't buy Imperial Seal. It's not that good. I mean, if you could buy it for $90, you should buy it and then flip it. Yeah, I'm thinking about selling mine, quite honestly. The one combo piece, or I guess combo enabler, that people who are inexperienced with this deck fail to see is a card called Intuition. Intuition is 2 and a blue, and it's an instant that says search your library for any 3 cards, reveal them to target opponent. He or she chooses one of those cards, put that card into your hand and the rest into your graveyard, shuffle your library afterwards. So people see this as I'll grab like 3 tutors, that way I automatically get a tutor. This can actually enable your win. So it's an instant speed spell. You play it right before your turn starts, and the 3 cards you search for are either Laboratory Maniac or Thassa's Oracle as one of them. You search for Unearth as one, and you search for Demonic Consultation as the other. With Cast Dissident Mage on the battlefield, what this allows you to do is whatever card they give you into your hand, if it's your Laboratory Maniac, you play it, and then you cast Demonic Consultation from your graveyard with the Cast ability. If they give you Unearth, you cast Unearth from your hand to return your Laboratory Maniac creature, and then you cast Demonic Consultation from your graveyard. If they give you Demonic Consultation, you cast Unearth from your graveyard to get your Laboratory Maniac back, and then you cast Demonic Consultation. It does involve you to have to do a cantrip afterward, but I think we're running like 10 cantrips. We should be able to draw into it, and that is the main way that you should be comboing out. If you're going to search for one card, I highly recommend searching for Intuition, unless you think your opponents are going to combo out themselves and you need to get a counterspell. It is okay to tutor for counterspells, but it's not always recommended. We play a total of 6 creatures. Laboratory Maniac and Thassa's Oracle are 2 of them. Dockside Extortion is in there because it's amazing ramp, especially in CDH. People are playing a ton of artifacts. So Dockside Extortionist is really going to ramp you out, probably into a win if you can get him out and get like 10 treasures. We play Spell Seeker, which allows us to find either a tutor ability or to find Demonic Consultation or Tainted Pact. We play Gilded Drake to keep people off of their commanders. Gilded Drake, when it enters the battlefield, you exchange control of Gilded Drake and target creature and opponent controls. So you can take the Najeela player off their Najeela and force them to have to remove it in order to get it back. Take the Derevi player's Derevi to make it so that they can't play stacks and not be affected on it by you. The last creature we play is Notion Thief, and this is a very, very mean card to play in a casual format. Notion Thief is 3 power, 1 toughness, 2 blue and a black for a human rogue with flash. It says that if an opponent would draw a card, except the first one he or she draws in each of his or her draw step, instead that player skips that draw and you draw a card. So Notion Thief is actually the way, if we don't have Demonic Consultation or Tainted Pact, that we're going to draw out our deck. What we're going to do is we're going to play a Notion Thief, or we're going to play Windfall. 2 and a blue, each player discards their hand, then draws cards equal to the greatest number of cards a player discarded this way. And then while we're holding priority with Windfall, we're going to flash out a Notion Thief. This makes it so if I discard 7, everyone's going to discard their hands, no one else is going to draw, and I'm going to draw 28 cards. So that's, and then we can Windfall again from our graveyard with Kess in order to draw the rest of our deck. We run a few hate pieces just to get some people to get them good early on in the game.
To get them good?
We've got a Ashiok Dream Render, which is a 1 hybrid blue-black, which prevents people from searching their libraries because tutors are very prevalent in CEDH. You can also use the -1 in order to mill them and exile their graveyard. Really good if someone has to cast a sorcery speed tutor like Imperial Seal that goes to the top of their deck, and then you in turn on the next turn play Ashiok and mill that away and exile it forever. We play Narset, Parter of Veils, which doesn't allow people to draw more than one card on any given turn. And we play Dak Faden, which can steal early artifacts, steal someone's Mana Crypt, steal someone's Mox Diamond or Mox Opal, Arcane Signet, whatever you got to do. Early game, because again, we live around the 4 or 5 mana, so we do have to wait a little bit. There is potential to combo off on like turn 3, but our deck likes to control on turn 3 and then try to win on like turn 5 or 6. So that's the deck. Every card has, because of Tainted Pack, every card has a different name. We do play 2 basics of every type. We play a snow covered version and a non snow covered version so that Tainted Pack works. Other than that, that's the deck.
That's the deck. And this is our first CEDH topic, I think, that we've really had on the podcast.
It was
nice kind of dipping our toes in for the first time. And I assume we will be able to talk more once the stay-at-home order is lifted and we can actually start attending the high-powered Saturdays.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun.
Me too.
I hope everyone out there can look at CEDH in a different light. You know, we're not mean people who play CEDH. Anyone who puts down a CEDH deck in a non-CEDH pod is a mean person, but that's not me.
Sure. I think that wraps up our podcast this week. So thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find the podcast on Twitter at GuardianPod. You can find me at ATFlory.
You can find me at WormCoilEngine.
You can also look for hashtag GuardianProjectPod to find our posts and episodes. And you can email us at GuardianProjectPod@gmail.com. We like to hear from you. And if you have any questions or comments that you'd like us to discuss or go over on the next episode, send them our way. Otherwise, thank you all for hanging out. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
See ya. That was good. That was good. I still really want to put together the Parlay Selvala, the competitive version.
Yeah.
With a Smothering Tithe to draw all the, or get all the treasures.
You should definitely look at Opus Thief. Although, I mean, Solvalla is two color, so it's a lot easier to build. But Opus Thief does that as well.
Yeah.
It's all about wheels. Wheels and value.
Wheels and value.